Welcome to WFPL's Jefferson County School Board District 2 debates. All four candidates up here are vying for retiring board member Steve Imhoff's seat. Steve Imhoff is in the audience today. Thank you so much for coming out. It's really appreciated. As well as all of you, this is, like Gabe was saying, a very important time in our education history, especially locally. And, you know, I think a lot of people are really happy to see the amount of candidates that are vying for the three seats that are up for election this year. I know that these four candidates have a wide variety of opinions for the district as well as experience. And so let's just get started with the introductions. I'd like each candidate to introduce themselves, why they're running perhaps, what their visions might be for the district, if they have any major issues that they're going to be running on. At this time, they can also introduce any websites or social media where people can get more information. And we'll start with Ms. Burfield.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. My name is Elizabeth Burfield. I am a mother of two young daughters, and I'm married to my husband, who's a local university professor here. We relocated to Louisville 4.5 years ago now, and my husband and I grew up in small farming communities in Illinois, and when he was doing his job search, we were really searching for a community that was rich in diversity and cultural experiences that we could share with our children as they grew. So we made the big jump to the big city of Louisville for us, and we've been incredibly happy to be here. And as my daughter begins her elementary school journey, we're starting our kindergarten tours tomorrow for her. I've been interested in education for many, many years. I'm a librarian. My husband teaches at the university level, so education in our household is paramount as far as concerns for us, for our children. And I want to share my experiences, my education, and my knowledge with our community. So thank you.
Do you have anywhere where people can get more information?
Yes, I handed out some cards, but if you are able to access Facebook and just type in my name, Elizabeth Burfield, B as in boy, E-R-F-I-E-L-D, or Facebook /eburfield.
Thank you so much. And that was a perfect amount of time. I'm trying to keep him to about a minute and a half. I forgot to mention that. Go ahead, Mr. Hamming.
Yes. Hi, my name is Phil Hamming. I've lived in Louisville my entire life and mostly in the Highlands. I have five children, one of which is a senior at Wagner High School, Conrad, and he will be earning his Eagle Scout Award next week at the Court of Honor. Very proud of Conrad. He's also in the School to Work program at UPS and very proud of him. My other four children do attend private school for various reasons. Three are at St. Agnes, one is at Presentation, but it would be my intention to send them to public school if I could be successful in helping to turn them around. My primary platform is neighborhood schools, and mostly because of all the money that we could save to reduce class sizes, hire more teachers, and get the 33% of our high schoolers that are dropping out attention they need in order to be successful. I think we have an epidemic right now in this town that not very many people are paying attention to. When one-third of your students are dropping out of high school, radical change is exactly what is needed, and I'm the candidate to make that change.
Thank you. And where can people find more information?
I have a website, philhammingforschoolboard.com, P-H-I-L-H-A-M-I-N-G forschoolboard.com.
Thank you. And Mr. Jones.
Thanks. I'm David Jones, Jr. I'm a business person who has a passion for education. Can you all hear me? Is the mic on?
Your mic's not on.
Testing, testing, testing. Is it on? Sorry about that. All right, so I'm David Jones, Jr. I am a business person with a passion for education. I have served on more than 30 boards, including large companies, small companies, for-profits, nonprofits, educational institutions. So I'm the only candidate who has direct experience with the task at hand, which is working on a board to make the institution better. I have worked for more than a decade with JCPS through both civic and business organizations. Everyone Reads, 55,000 Degrees, Business Leaders for Education, all focused on improving the outcomes and student achievement in our schools. I'm a parent of two children who attended JCPS. Both of them have, one's graduated from college now, one is still in college. Myself, I attended the old Louisville Public Schools, Belknap Elementary. As a business person, I've worked with companies that have hired thousands of JCPS grads and know firsthand the importance of having quality employees, people in this community who are able to capture the good jobs that we need for our future. And last but absolutely not least, I have spent a lot of time in the classroom. I've been a teacher of students of English as a second language. I've taught at the college, graduate school levels. I've taught at my Sunday school, and I have some idea of what the teachers face every day. So I'm passionate about education. I want to apply my experience to making the schools better, and I absolutely believe that we can do it. You can find more information about me on Facebook, David Jones for School Board, or on the web. It's Jones, numeral 4, JCPS.com.
Thank you. Mr. Tollhurst.
My name is George Tollhurst. I live in Crescent Hill. And we have a problem. Children cannot read, write, or add. We've been going downhill for 70 past years, and some. I'm a victim of the public school system. I saw it, seen it happening when I was in grammar school, and it's still happening. Our illustrious school board likes to brag for a school system. They haven't expelled a child in 25 years. Pretty bad. But the progressive education is not working. The Manns and the Deweys is not working. For over 3,000 years, we've managed to teach people how to read in this world. And it shouldn't be that difficult doing it again, instead of having study after study after study telling us what we're doing wrong. I ran for the superintendent of public instruction in 79 and 83. In 79, I carried Jefferson County, got nearly twice as many votes as Raymond Barber, who won the race, and about 5,000 more than Jerry Alleen, who was a teacher's choice in the race, also lived in Jefferson County and a teacher. But I had no money, and I carried Odom in Jefferson County and lost the rest of the state. I often was asked, what qualified me to have such a elite job? I said, gosh, anyone with a sixth grade education that can read and compute what they read can do no worse. And I believe that's a fact today. And it goes on and on and on. I've lived in all sections of the city. I've owned property in Southwest Jefferson County, the West End, near downtown, Okolona. And a couple other houses, Central Louisville. And I've been involved in politics and things like that since 75. When he told me that my children are supposed to be, might be bus or something like that. At that time, they was going to school by the water company.
And Mr. Tollhurst, if you can wrap it up, if you can.
I'll tell you all about it later if you care to ask. Thank you.
And can people find more information anywhere else on the web or the flyers?
g/Tollhurst@yahoo.com.
Thank you so much. Thank you all four for your introductions. Now for the debate portion of the program. Tonight will be an informative discussion where the public will have the chance to hear directly from the candidates about key issues affecting Jefferson County Public Schools. I will ask direct a question to one candidate, and that candidate will have about a minute to respond. Each candidate will have the same amount of time to respond after that. If there are follow-up questions or if a candidate is mentioned by name, I'll give that other candidate a time to have a rebuttal response. I'll be trying also to give everyone equal time during this debate. We'll begin. Many of you have said that you wanted to meet with constituents before deciding some of the bigger issues, before deciding your stances on some of the bigger issues in the district. My first question is, how many of you have started meeting with constituents, and what are you trying to do, what are you doing to find the voice of your community, and what does that community look like? What does District 2 look like, and how is it unique? And we'll start with Ms. Burfield.
Okay, great. Well, I think that question especially relates to the ongoing debate we have in our community regarding our student assignment plan and the platform of some in this race and in other districts as far as neighborhood schools go. And, you know, ever since I have been following the division of these lines, I found myself somewhat in the middle, but leaning more towards, you know, standing behind the plan that we have, because I support the core mission of promoting diversity and retaining the integration of our school district. I found that the platform of some, not necessarily on this panel, but throughout other districts, when we raise the issue of neighborhood schools, to be somewhat off-putting to many in terms of having perhaps racial undertones, whether they perhaps mean that or not. So it's been my core mission as I go on my evening walks with my children and talk to my friends and my play groups and my library groups and, you know, children that my children go to school with, and to gauge these parents, because I feel that I'm representative of a new generation of parents entering JCPS. And for my generation, diversity is a given. It's not a choice. Of course we want diversity in our schools. It shouldn't be an option. It should be mandated. But there are different ways to go about that. And I think that there is a growing consensus in our community that our current student assignment plan is not fulfilling that need, and that voices of many parents who are concerned with neighborhood schools are not being heard. So in this election, I view myself as an intelligent, rational, compassionate voice in such divisive issues. I may have a personal opinion one way or the other, but when it comes down to it, I want to support what our community feels is correct, and I don't want my personal views to overshadow that of our community.
Thank you so much. Mr. Hemming?
I've been talking with a lot of friends and family that live in District 2, and over the next few weeks, I'll be walking every street in District 2, and on my website, Phil Hamming for School Board, I'll be having the dates of which weeks I'll be in your neighborhood. But to get back to my primary platform of neighborhood schools, I want to make it very clear that the only difference in my opinion of what is going on right now is I want to give every parent the choice of going to their neighborhood school. That doesn't mean they have to go to it. That doesn't mean anything other than what it says. You have the choice to go to your neighborhood school. Now, some people have already brought up to me some limitations, such as, well, some of these schools have been torn down and moved. But just this afternoon, I was speaking with a woman at the Kentucky Center for the Arts at the Idea Fest, and she mentioned to me that down in the West End, you have St. Columba, St. Cecilia, St. Anthony, St. George, the old McFerrin Elementary. These are buildings that need that are in disrepair, that could be fixed up and given back to the community in the form of very much smaller class sizes. I want to pour resources into the schools that need them, and make it easier for parents to participate in their child's education.
Thank you so much. Mr. Jones, what have you done to reach out to constituents in your area, and what are you going to be doing in the next month?
Okay, thanks, Devin. I've been walking the neighborhoods for about 2.5 weeks and have plans this weekend. I'll be in the Newburgh area, some of the, you know, kind of the south side of District 2. I've also been, really for the last month or so, I'm going to the farmers markets, community meetings. I've got some very attractive T-shirts that say David Jones for School Board on that I've been able to convince a couple friends and especially my wife to wear and come with me on. So it's been fun. I think the other candidates are right that people want to talk a lot about the student assignment plan. Other issues I've heard about are taxation. People are concerned about the taxes and wonder where that's going. And there's also a fair amount of concern about specific examples of underperformance in the school system where student achievement is not happening. Foreign languages I hear some about so far. And I assume we'll be coming back to the student assignment plan, so I'll stop for now.
Thank you.
I'll be walking. My Facebook page will say where I'm going to be and photos and stuff of where I've been.
Thank you. And Mr. Tallhurst, how have you tried to reach out to constituents in your District 2? How have you tried to reach out to constituents in District 2? Have you made any progress with trying to find the voice of your community?
I've been awful busy just studying the issues. The last time I ran for office was the Metro Council when he first merged the city. And I walked till I could walk no more. I plan on doing some walking this time, but I'm more interested in talking to business people in larger crowds rather than individual people one at a time. We need to get back to the neighborhood school system. We are busing over 70,000 children out of 96,000 children this year, according to the Courier Journal. In 75, we only bused 10,000 out of about 126,000 due to a court order. Now, years after that court order has been rescinded, and after the Supreme Court justices have said children could go to the school of their choice, we're still busing over 70,000. I think it's just my own personal opinion. It's a little bit of insanity going on here. We need to, should be no dropout factories, which we do have. Should be no children failing in courses without somebody helping them out. All schools should be the same. We shouldn't have underachieving schools. All your grammar schools should be teaching the same courses. And your children in all your schools should be coming along about the same level.
Thank you so much. And we will get to the neighborhood schools issue as well a little bit later as well. That brings me actually to my next question, which is around student achievement. It seems to be a top priority among most candidates for obvious reasons. But the idea of what student achievement is can be argued. My question, and we'll start with Mr. Hamming, is what does student achievement mean to you? What factors should we be looking at for student achievement? And what are some of the barriers in the district to better performance in our schools?
Well, one of the things I failed to mention in my introduction is that I taught for 2 years at Newburgh Middle School, 92 to 94, and 1 year at Holy Cross High School. When I was at Newburgh, there were students in my class that were unprepared to even be in middle school. This is why it begins at the elementary level. And to be busing kids from one end of town to the other, if nothing else, we should limit this practice to only middle schoolers and high schoolers. If diversity is only achievable in that regard, then fine. But to put a kindergartner or a first grader or a second grader on a bus and send them across town in the interest of somebody else's agenda does not serve their educational needs. And we need to prepare them better at the kindergarten, first grade, and second grade level at their own neighborhood school before we send them out into the community at large to get the rest of their education.
Mr. Jones.
So the question was about student achievement and what we're going to do to improve it. Let me start with, I think, the first part, Devin, of your question, which was how do we define student achievement? And we're actually in a pretty interesting place right now. The new members of the school board will have to grapple with the fact that Kentucky is the first state out of 46 so far to adopt what are called the Common Core standards. And these are standards that the governors and the legislatures of the 46 states have adopted, which for the first time are the same amongst all these states, and second, the same as the international standard. So beginning next month, we're going to get information, because our students took the test last year and the results are about to come out, showing how we actually stack up globally. And it's going to be a very cold shower. What we're going to learn is 30% or maybe higher of our students who we currently rank as proficient, when we compare them only within Kentucky, are actually not proficient when compared to this global, what they call the Common Core standards. Now, this is going to be unhappy news for a lot of parents, but, you know, in terms of what does student achievement mean, it means our students are going to be able to go anywhere in the world and compete with anybody else. Our children are not stupider than people anywhere else in the world, and our teachers are no less gifted than anywhere else in the world. So these Common Core standards are a really good thing. We're going to be measuring to the proper level. How do you improve student achievement?
In just 10 seconds.
I'm sorry. You improve student achievement through great leadership at the district level and great leadership in each school that enables teachers to do great work.
And Mr. Tolhurst, on the issue of student achievement and how you define that, can you give us your ideas, your vision on what that looks like?
Teaching the simple basics, teaching them to think, be individuals, comprehend, so they can go out into the world and be successful, so they can get a job, so they can read a phone book. I've got people way back in the 70s. That went to school that can't read a phone book. I've got, heck, I had two friends back in the 70s. One went to the county system, one went to the city system. Both very intelligent people. But when they left the school system at 16, neither one could read or write. One in the county, one in the city. We need a testing program. A couple of times a year for all classes. We need an evaluation test for the teachers. We need to free the schools of the standards of the NEA. We need to give our teachers the freedom to teach, not tie their hands. We need to... we need to overhaul the whole system. I mean, we got to start from the bottom.
And Mr.
Talking
Toler's
about doing this, talking about doing that, and yet we keep on dropping further and further back every year. Presently, we're behind the rest of the state, and the country is behind the rest of the civilized and some of the uncivilized world as well. And it's getting wider apart.
Just a follow-up question on that. The recent changes that the state of Kentucky did with Senate Bill 1 and the new accountability system, is that in the right direction? Is that it's going somewhere where along the lines what you're talking about, redoing the whole system?
Not really. I just read Vision for 75 or 50 or something. And in fact, I've read it a couple times. And when you read it and you study it, all you want to do is this and that, talking about doing things, but nobody's actually teaching the children. The children need to have an education. They need to be able to come to school and be comfortable. They need some entertainment, but the school's not there to babysit them.
Okay, thank you so much. Ms. Burfield, same question. Student achievement, what does it look like? What are some of the data points that maybe we're going to be looking at that are more important than others, or maybe there's a group of data points that students should be judged on?
Sure. I think, I've been reading a lot lately, a lot of Diane Ravitch, if anyone is familiar with her, the well-known educator and historian, reading a lot about student testing, and the results can often be mixed, misleading, hard for teachers. We need some sort of measure as far as comparing ourselves to the state, to our nation, to other nations, but we also need to focus not just on meeting math and reading skills, but, our students are losing a lot of reasoning skills, creative thinking, social studies, history, all these other core areas of curriculum that are being put aside as we just prep students for tests. I think there are core goals that we should meet along the way of every student's educational path, hopefully culminating in graduation and beyond. My husband teaches at the university level. He sees many local students that make it to the university level but are still unprepared when they get there. I grew up in a very rural school district. It was a consolidated school district of three towns, and there were less than 70 students in my graduating class. I did very well in high school, but as I entered our state university, I found myself taking a lot of general education requirements over again, because even though I did well in my school and I had great grades, it wasn't meeting what other students in suburban schools had. I had no idea what an AP course was until I got to the university. And I realized that other students came in with college credit. So, there's so many different ways to measure that. And, we need standards, but fair standards.
And I guess I would like to get into the neighborhood schools issue, since that seems like one of the hot topics. I like to keep the answers as concise as possible. We've heard some opinions right now or before, but I'd like to start with Mr. Jones on whether you think there are any negative implications to neighborhood schools.
Okay. Good luck with keeping them concise.
I'll start the timer right now.
So I understand why people like the idea of neighborhood schools. There's a lot of emotional appeal. There's a lot of nostalgia. And in many neighborhoods, the closest school is a great school. But there are also some real challenges with the idea that we would, in one fell swoop, change the current assignment plan and give every family the right to go to their closest school. The concerns I have about that are, first, it would result in overcrowding at the popular schools in a gigantic way, and I am not in favor of crowding the classrooms in some schools. The alternative to overcrowding would be redrawing the lines, which would lead some people to be left out from the school that they think is their home school, and we'd be just as mad at each other as we are today, would be my prediction. Another corollary of a kind of one fell swoop adoption of neighborhood schools would be we would be spending hundreds of millions of dollars building new schools. Now, the math is, 20% of the population is in a different place than it was a couple decades ago. People have moved further east and further south. The schools are not where the people are. And I am opposed to going into heavy taxation of the population today for things that are unrelated to student achievement in the near term. And that's the way I would look at that big capital project.
30 seconds.
I'm also opposed to isolating poor kids in the weakest neighborhoods. And that is what I think would result. The educational implications of that would be very bad for a system right now that is already not working for many of those children. And then last but not least, I think that this would harm the choice that many families, including my own, value very much. We chose to send our kids from the Highlands to Brandeis Elementary, voluntarily put them on a bus, and we got a great education there. Lots of families value the choice today. Thank you.
Mr. Tolhurst, I read in the Courier Journal you changed your middle name to stop the buses. Is that a true statement?
Yes, back in 1980, I had my name changed to George Stop the Bus Tolhurst.
My question to you is, do you see any negative impacts to neighborhood schools? No, sorry. Do you see any negative impacts to neighborhood schools? For example,
not
what
really,
Mr. Jones
I don't.
Said.
We need to have smaller neighborhood schools. We need to eliminate the busing completely. We can take and have the children go to the schools in their neighborhood or schools of choice, but let their parents be responsible for getting them there, either by bike, walking, TARC, carpool, volunteers. But it can happen again. We don't have to build all new schools. We don't have to build no more centralized monstrosities where the students don't know each other, where the faculty don't know the students, and et cetera. We need to build comfortable settings, not build, but set up comfortable settings. And we can use a variety of different things. But the most important thing I'd have to do is work with the school board, because not one of us can do anything by ourselves. We have to do it in unison with the school board. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Burfield, do you see negative implications to neighborhood schools?
Or? Certainly. I think, as I've been talking to a lot of other parents and, peers of my child, everyone tells me, it seems like in this election we've got choice A or choice B. Why isn't there an A plus B or a choice C? I think we need to listen to what parents and candidates that are in favor of neighborhood schools say. I think there are a lot of great reasons for having schools close to your home, but there are a lot of negatives. First and foremost is there's a lot of confusion over the terms neighborhood schools. I think keeping younger children closer to home is a good idea. Having a local option, not necessarily, I don't think anyone can guarantee that any child is going to be able to get into any school, partially because of what Mr. Jones said about population changes and school capacity. But, when we talk about older grades, middle school and high school, I don't see how a neighborhood middle school or high school in every neighborhood is feasible. The resources required to staff, to provide extracurricular activities, athletics for a middle or high school school is just it's just not possible, I think, at, a neighborhood level. I think by the time students reach those older grades, parents are looking for schools that best fit their children's ambitions and their attributes, their talents, and probably are willing to travel a little bit farther. Also, obviously, we talked a little bit about diversity and the history that we've been through. I believe that the city is different than what it was nearly 40 years ago. I believe that a lot of my peers who grew up in the era of busing have a completely different mindset than perhaps their parents and grandparents have. However, the demographics of our city don't necessarily reflect that shift. We still have neighborhoods that are highly segregated. When you can divide your city based on where an interstate lies, we still have a long way to go. So, obviously, the the effects of that on our population are a big negative.
And Mr. Hamming, we know that you are for neighborhood schools. How do you see that working? Do you see that in an easy transition back to neighborhood schools?
I want to answer the question with a quick story. When I did my student teaching at Carruthers Middle School back in the spring of 1992, a student in our class got in trouble. It was my job to call the parent to tell them they had to come pick their child up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I called. I said, your child got in trouble in school today. You have to come get them at 4 o'clock. The parent asked me, where are you located? I said, we're out here in Billtown Road in J-Town. The parent said, J-Town, is that Jeffersonville or Jeffersontown? They didn't know which state their child went to school in. And I think that's true of a lot of parents that put their kid on the bus in the morning. They don't see him until they get off in the afternoon. Neighborhood schools are the only way that every parent has a chance to be involved in their kid's school, period. And to answer Mr. Jones' concerns, I wouldn't do it in one fell swoop. We would start gradually, one elementary school at a time. And as far as diversity goes, like I said, I want to have sister schools from one end of town to the other that cooperate in plays and field trips and lots of other activities that they can do things together so that they can experience diversity but without having to sit right next to each other in school. I've got a little bit more time left. We've got 1,000 buses a day running around this town. It costs roughly $38,000 per bus, not even counting a lot of the auxiliary expenses. We can reduce class sizes and give our kids a better education with neighborhood schools.
Since he did mention you by name, I'm curious, what about integrate or going back to neighborhood schools in a slow fashion and also the idea of cutting costs with the buses? Is that a significant reason to revert back to neighborhood schools?
We don't need to cut the cost. And
I'm sorry. This is for Mr. Jones. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I think I don't expect the debate over neighborhood schools to be answered quickly. I think this question is going to be with us for a while. And it's also true that the population has moved. So over time, we're going to be building new schools. The thing that I hear most often is I support neighborhood schools as the Frankfurt Law would have described them, which is not a subtle So as I think Ms. Burfield said, it depends a little bit on what you mean by neighborhood schools. But I think we got to pay very careful attention to the financial, the choice, the diversity, you know, to all of these implications right now, because we have a complicated system. And it is going to cost a lot of money to refit some schools and to build new ones. It also would be educationally, in my view, disastrous to isolate the weakest educationally prepared children altogether, which I think is the implication of let's keep everybody in a neighborhood school for elementary school. I mean, if you don't have the opportunity to mix kids when they're young and let everybody talk and, kind of level out the corollary that I understand from the educational literature is much like foreign language learning. You know, if kids go into a foreign language classroom when they're young, they will very quickly learn the foreign language, much harder later.
And just in 10 seconds.
Okay. So I think, what I am worried about is the slam it on hard now version of neighborhood schools. Clearly, we're going to change over time.
Thank you. Whoever becomes the next District 2 board member will not just have to speak and represent constituents. They'll have to work with other board members. They'll also have to communicate and deal with Superintendent Donna Hargan's administration. I'm curious if you support, and this question will go to Mr. Tallhurst, if you support Superintendent Donna Hargan's first year on the job, if you found anything that she did to be something that you might have not have agreed with along the way. How do you think she's done the first year, and what might you have liked to see her do differently?
I don't think she's been in the job long enough to evaluate her to that point yet, but I don't think we need to be paying as much as we're paying for a superintendent. We need to set a pay scale for a lot of positions and let people apply for the jobs. We don't need to hire people to take and search for people to run our schools and do other things. That's what we have a school board for. We can put out applications and hire people like they do in any other business. And we need to get more parental involvement in our schools.
Do you think she's done an okay job forming the central administration office with the communications person? Do you find what she's done so far to try to reach out to parents more?
Yeah, I think she has, but she's got a lot of help. I think she's got 7 or 8 assistant superintendents, just like we just give all our elementary and middle schools assistant principals, I think, or a good part of them. And now our buses, you know, they got monitors, they got GPS systems, and now they're putting all new cameras on them. I guess next year we can expect to have a superintendent or a principal or assistant principal or something on them go along as well.
Thank you. Ms. Burfield, do you support superintendent's first year on the job? Do you agree with most of the decisions she's made? What would you have liked to see different?
I do. I think she's off to a good start, especially given the challenges that she's been handed. A big part of my platform is fiscal responsibility and using our money, our tax money, our federal and state money wisely. And, you know, she has eliminated a lot of high paid administrative positions, which I applaud. There are also the creation of other high paid administrative positions. So it seems sometimes for every positive step we take, there's something not so great to go along with it. For example, the recent tax increase. I've had a lot of people ask me about that. And if I would have supported that, I would have. I would support a tax increase that directly benefits students. And if we're losing funding from the state and from federal monies, we need to supplement that somehow, as much as I don't like to pay more in taxes, but sometimes it's a necessity. However, you know, to go along a little bit with the neighborhood schools and our current plan, you know, starting next year, we're going to have a new cluster plan put out where it's supposedly supposed to reduce busing and reduce the cost. Yet in the tax increase, we're allocating about $3.5 million back into transportation. So I think, you know, that's more of a school board issue. But, you know, there needs to be clear distinctions over, you know, what's going on and more transparent information. We can't say that we're reducing busing and spending if we're asking for an increase in taxes to go back to transportation. So, you know, I think she's off to a good start, but I think we need to follow through more with the decisions that we make as far as our finances go.
And Mr. Hamming, would you have supported the tax increase? And then also, what are your thoughts on Superintendent Donna Hargens?
First of all, I think Donna Hargens was a terrific hire. One of the things that she did was she went after this topic of redlining, where administrators and teachers that were demoted and they were able to keep their previous salary, and she put a stop to that, and I commend her for that. I would have voted against the tax increase on principal alone, just because right now we're spending roughly $10,500 per student. They went after an additional property tax increase, which raised another $17 million, which on a budget of $1.1 billion, I think they could have renegotiated, some contracts in order to save $17 million. To me, I went to that board meeting, and it didn't even appear to me as if they had even tried to squeeze the budget anywhere. They just said, we need $17 million more. It's only $23 more per $100,000. Sure, that sounds great. Let's do it. But somewhere along the line, you got to put your foot down and say, you know, we got everybody else is tightening their belt in this economy. I think they should have tried to do that too.
And Mr. Jones.
I am very pleased with how Dr. Hargens has conducted herself in her first year. When she first arrived, I was really impressed that she went around town and listened. She seemed to be everywhere, and she was listening to the community in a very impressive way. I like the fact that she commissioned the curriculum audit, and it's it's a 500-page document, but it gives us an incredibly detailed view of where our money is spent and what's going on, where we're getting results and where we're not within the school system. I commend it to anybody who really, really wants to know kind of where the bodies are buried in the way the system operates now. And as others have mentioned, she did take action on it. She removed a little bit of money from the central office that was being spent on stuff far removed from student achievement and redeployed it into assistant principals and things that were more closely related. So I think, you know, she is off to a good start. I also like the way she reorganized her team. She has fewer direct reports, and I'm sort of a management geek. You know, I think that this is a billion-dollar organization. The only way you can get it to do anything different is through managing it differently and changing the way you spend money and leading it better. And, you know, I think the jury's still out. You know, will she change as fast as we all want? You know, you can't judge that after 1 year, but she's off to a good start.
Thank you. Next month, we are expecting to hear the test results for the first year of, under the new accountability system. Like Mr. Jones was saying, those the number of students deemed proficient by the state is expected to drop. A huge part of what we're being told by the Kentucky Department of Education and through the school district is to communicate what this actually means to parents. And I think parent communication and parent involvement is something that the school district has really been trying to improve the past year, at least since I've been here. My question to Ms. Burfield is, what more can the district do to communicate to parents, not just with test scores, but overall? Are they doing an adequate job? And if not, what more could they do?
Well, perhaps adequate. I think there's definitely a lot of room for improvement. For example, I tried to use School Finder today. As I mentioned, we'll be starting our kindergarten tours for my daughter tomorrow, and the only options I have are for the 2012-2013 year. So I can't find out what's in my cluster for next year at this day, even though tomorrow I start my kindergarten tours. Definitely we need help on the website, and I'm sure there's an administrator that's paid a healthy salary to do such things. I think we need to do a profoundly better job of educating parents on how critical they are in the educational process. You know, I've been reading to my daughter since I was pregnant with her, and I don't like to brag, but she's 4 and she can read already. And if only children had half of what she's had in her life, which aren't material things, nothing that money bought, just the time that I've spent with her. And not every family has those resources, but just letting parents know how important it is to sit down and read with your child from an early age. I'm a librarian, as you can tell. My sister-in-law is a librarian, my sister is a librarian, and my husband's aunt is a librarian. So early literacy is very important in our family. But, you know, there's a whole generation of parents now that perhaps grew up going to JCPS that don't know how important they are to their children's success because they didn't have those same advantages. I love the idea of community centers or learning centers where parents can learn alongside their children, where, you know, I hear parents say that sometimes they don't know how to help their children with their homework, even, you know, in fifth and sixth grade when they get to math. You know, inviting them into the classroom, showing them how to help their students. The only way you can help them is sometimes to have someone show you how to help them. So just engaging.
Mr. Hamming.
In my experience teaching in public schools, there are only two ways to improve student achievement. One is to get the students that have behavior and learning disorders the individual attention they need. With the money that we would save, again, from the busing, we could hire right off the bat 200 or 300 additional ECE teachers to get the 2 or 3 kids out of every 31-child classroom the focused attention that they need. The other thing is parent involvement. Nothing is going to contribute better to parent involvement than going back to community schools. It doesn't just tear apart a school to have kids go from all over town. You walk through the streets of any neighborhood, and they don't know each other because their kids all go to different schools. And again, if they still want to go to the magnet program of their choice, they're still going to have that opportunity. But better parent involvement, more focused attention on the kids that need it, and reducing class sizes. We could go down to the least performing school in the district, and if we took those 31 kids in a classroom or 23 in elementary and gave them 10-to-1 with a teacher, you would see immediate results, immediate, overnight. You don't have to wait for leadership to trickle down or sitting next to someone who's richer than you to rub off on you somehow like David Jones thinks is going to happen. You have to get the kids' individual attention, 10-to-1, in the areas that they need it. 33% are dropping out, and if you go to any elementary or middle school teacher, they can identify for you right now which ones they will be. They're not hiding amongst you. These are kids that you can ask any 5th, 6th, 7th, or 8th grade teacher which one of these kids are probably going to drop out, and they'll say this one, and this one. They already know. We can catch them at an early age, find out what they're gifted in, and get them in a track that's where they're going to be successful at an early age, and they won't drop out.
Thank you. And Mr. Jones, the idea of parent engagement and communication with parents? What can the district do more? What's it doing well?
Okay, there's an awful lot of room for improvement here. And I'll divide it up into a couple of different buckets. One is the district is a very big organization, and every big organization in the world right now is struggling with trying to figure out how to communicate with people with all the different ways we've got to communicate these days. You know, people expect to have texts and phone calls and emails and Facebook access to the big institutions that they deal with. That creates tremendous opportunity for an organization like JCPS to personalize the communication with families and with students. And, you know, in my day job, I spend a lot of time with innovative education and media and healthcare companies that are trying to use these new tools to communicate better. And, you know, you're seeing changes in the way you deal with your radio station, for example, which now is sending you email and, you know, information through many different ways with your healthcare company, with whatever. So at the central level, there's this huge snarl. And I'll just give you one example, which all of us have probably dealt with. If you look at the JCPS website and you're thinking of running for the school board and you want to know what your district is, the map is inaccurate. And if you want to be a voter, you can't tell which district you're in because the map is inaccurate. There's plenty of other examples that I could give. Ms. Burfield has given some of them about how hard it is to find where you're going to school. But parental engagement is not all about does your kid go to school far away or close. It's also about the other ways of communicating. And there are plenty of families who choose to take their kids, to put them on a bus, to go to different places. And I think we're greatly oversimplifying the issue if we think the only way you can communicate with parents is if they are physically in the building. That is simply not a 21st century way to look at the world.
Mr. Tolhurst, do you agree with that? Is there other ways to reach out to parents? I mean, you seem to be very much in favor of neighborhood schools, and you've talked a lot about it tonight. But what else can the district do? Let's say neighborhood schools isn't going to be a thing. What more can they do in the district to kind of reach out to parents? And is the district doing a good enough job right now?
Reach out by parents, out to the parents by letting the children go to school in their neighborhoods. It's difficult to be involved with your school when it's 10 or 15 miles away from your home. We need to get back to teaching the children. Like I said earlier, smaller neighborhood schools, schools of choice, let them get there with their parents' help or by walking or biking. We just, our schools really need to be overhauled.
Is that the only way? Is that the only way to reach out to parents? Is that the strongest and only way to reach out to parents? What more can, let's say neighborhood schools doesn't happen. What more could the district do to reach out to parents?
Well, neighborhood schools aren't going to happen for a long time. But from what I understand, especially from a lot of my black friends in the West End, the school board wants them to get involved, but makes it very difficult for them to get involved. We need to figure some way. We need some transparency. I mean, I can go to the Jefferson County School Board web, and I try to learn things. And really, there's so much I'd like to know that I can't really find out from our own school board on the web. We need to just let the people know everything that's going on in the school system, where all their money's going, and exactly what's happening, what they're teaching, what they're doing, and things like that. And I guarantee you, you will get more parental involvement if they know really what's going on and if they have the opportunity to get involved. Unfortunately, though, back in the 70s, we used to pack the school board meetings. The last two times they raised the tax, there are two people that showed up to oppose the tax in the entire county, myself and one other. We need to get them involved. We need to get the media on our side. We need to have people know more about what's going on, where meetings are, where they can go, what they can do, and however else they may help.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, you may be at least one of the most well-known candidates to the public. You've received the backing of the mayor and the teachers union. How can you assure the public that if elected, you're not just going to be a rubber stamp for these two entities and just comply with their ideas?
Well, I think clearest answer to that is where I started. I've served on more than 30 boards, and I think, Devin, if you investigated, actually I was on the board of the Public Radio Partnership when this organization was formed, you're not going to find anybody that said I was a rubber stamp for anybody. You know, I am always focused on whatever the mission is of the organization. And all boards have to deal with some mix of individual agendas and, you know, legacy problems and sacred cows and dreamy future, and find somewhere in there the core of reality that you can actually get behind and spend your money on and affect. So the experience, I think, of working through the strange role of a board member who is not a member of management, not a hands-on full-time person, but in this case, really kind of a civic volunteer, I think the experience will be helpful there. Otherwise, I mean, with respect to the teacher support, you know, I want to just say very directly, I am very pleased and gratified that the teachers union chose to endorse me. Of course, I'm thrilled that the mayor and the lieutenant governor and Steve Imhoff and a lot of others have. But I don't think very many people are going to take seriously the idea that I am a tool of the teachers union.
And we have a comment from Mr. Hamming.
Well, I'd be more interested in Mr. Jones commenting on how he's going to separate his prior involvement with Humana from the schools, being that they handle the health insurance program for JCPS. And also tonight he's admitted that his venture capital business is working with companies that develop educational products.
So I think the way you do that, just like on any other board, Phil, is if there is a conflict of interest, which in the case of the school board's decision of where to purchase its health benefits, there very well could be, I would disclose the conflict of interest and I would recuse myself from any participation in it.
But that's a huge part of the budget to recuse yourself from.
Is it?
Insurance? I think we all pay it.
I think we all pay it, but that's what I would do. So that's how that would be handled. In the event that any of the tiny little companies that I work with through my venture capital business were working with or wanted to work with JCPS, it would be the same thing. Those kinds of issues come up all the time with people who are deeply involved in a wide variety of issues. I'm also on the board of 55,000 Degrees, the Business Leaders for Education group. They're civic and nonprofit organizations that could present the same kind of issues. I think, you know, what I offer is the connectedness to the people in the organizations who are working on all these other things, the knowledge that comes from that. And, you know, I certainly don't want to hold myself out as a technology expert because of my work with little technology companies, but I certainly think I know, or I spend a lot of time trying to understand the potential of these miraculous smartphones and iPads and mobile devices that people are carrying with them to change the way students learn. I think it'll be a big plus.
The Jefferson County Teachers Association has financed candidates the past 3 years over $1 million for the candidates that it supported. So far this year, it hasn't put any money into the race. I just contacted the state today. But does money in races like this give candidates an unfair advantage? Should money be involved in nonpartisan races like this? And the question goes to Mr. Hamming.
Well, I think it would be okay if teachers would be allowed to give unlimited amounts of their own money to the candidate of their choice, but they are not. In this town, for years, the JCTA has run the school board, and I'd like to have some. I've asked the Courier Journal and others to produce records on how many candidates, you know, over the past several years have been endorsed. I don't think there've been any that won without the JCTA's endorsement. And so, you know, not that I have anything against the teachers union. It's just that you need to have a separate entity negotiating with them on contracts. If they bought their election to get them in there, or put an army of teachers through the streets to get them elected, and a contract negotiation comes up, obviously they're going to feel beholden to that organization. And these are issues that have to be talked about and discussed.
Would you accept upwards of $100,000 from the teachers' union in a race?
I haven't been endorsed by them and have not sought their endorsement.
If they would endorse you?
I would not accept it.
Same question. And we'll go to you. Does the backing of by the teachers' union, and again, they haven't financed any race or any candidates so far this year, does that give it an unfair advantage in a race like this? Oh, sorry, you, Mr. Jones.
So does the backing by the teachers' union give an unfair advantage? I don't know. I mean, I don't think it is unfair for the teachers to choose to be represented by a union. And, I'm usually asked this question from the other side, which is it unfair for corporations to be able to make unlimited political donations? But, the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled that unions and corporations and individuals can give huge amounts of money. I mean, those are the rules of the road. I did not ask the teachers' union to endorse me, but I'm pleased that they did. And I hope that it portends a good partnership between certainly an independent member of the board, if I have the good fortune to be elected, and the representative of the teachers, because we've got a lot of work to do. There's going to have to be a lot of change coming, and the teachers are going to have to be the principal deliverers of that change. You can't do anything in the school system without working effectively with teachers.
Mr. Tolhurst, same question. The backing by Jefferson County Teachers Association for certain candidates, do you think it gives an unfair advantage? Should money be involved in school board races like this?
Not really. I think a lot of people are so unhappy with education, the back is not going to help them that much.
Would you accept money from the teachers' union?
I would accept money from the devil himself if it helped education.
That's a fair answer.
But I think the teachers' union should. I don't think we should have one. I'm not against union, but at one time there was a need for them in this country. But I think the time of the need has gone past. I think they're detrimental to the education of our children. I think they're damaging it. They care just for lining their own pockets and how much power they can get. They're at the point now where they're electing presidents. That's the most powerful pack we have in the country, teacher unions. They spend the most money to get people elected than any other union. The people of this country have to realize that if we're going to save it, we're going to have to educate ourselves. Thank you.
And Ms. Burfield, same question.
Well, I think it certainly gives them an unfair advantage, and not just in relation to JCTA, but spending overall. I would ask if Mr. Jones, he mentioned the mayor's endorsement. I do believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that Mr. Jones was a heavy donor in the Fisher campaign. So I think that's something that should be disclosed if you're mentioning someone's endorsement, if there are prior involvements. I know Mr. Hamming and I have both had background checks taken out on us, also by, from what I found in my research, to be a heavy donor to the Fisher campaign. So not that, everyone spends their money how they choose. And, not to say that's right or wrong. I'm a very frugal, my husband would say cheap person. I said I want to allocate about $100 for my campaign. I have two professional signs. I have my business cards and I have a car magnet. I would not accept money, probably upwards of more than $100 from any given person. I haven't asked my friends for money because to me, I'm running because I want to run on my intelligence and my vision and my ideas for our community, not because I represent any sort of special interest or private interest, and not that any of these other candidates do. But for me personally, this is why I'm running. And, my husband has worked on many a political campaign, and we have a nightly debate. I enjoy debates over yard signs, and he wants to go off and order them himself, and I don't want to. I don't want someone to vote for me just because they see 10 yard signs. I want them to vote for me because they see me as a mix between Mr. Jones and Mr. Hamming, who is willing to cooperate and be a voice for both those in favor of neighborhood schools and those who still want to, respect the plan that we have. And to me, that's not something that just a yard sign can put out there. So.
And we'll go for about 15 more minutes, but would you like to respond to the idea of giving to the mayoral campaign and whether you think it's appropriate to disclose that relationship there, or at least that financial relationship?
I'm happy to disclose it. Greg Fisher is an old friend, a person who I've worked with on building new businesses, going back into the 90s, and I did support him for mayor. I gave to his campaign, and I'm proud of the fact that he won, and I think that the relationship between the mayor, the business leadership, the school board, the superintendent, all of that can be a very big plus. For too long, the school system has operated as kind of a separate universe, a separate silo, really not connected to the leadership of this city. And I think that is one of the reasons why, in some ways, it has drifted. And the results are not what we need going forward. So, yeah, I'm happy to disclose that. I think anybody who spends 2 seconds on the web can also find it through the plethora of sites that list political contributions by anybody.
Thank you. Ms. Burfield, you're 29, correct?
Yes.
You're one of the youngest candidates vying for a seat. I believe you have to be 24, that's correct?
Yes. You've
been in Louisville for 4 years, mm-hmm. in District 2 for 4 years. What have you done to catch yourself up on some of the issues? What have you done to kind of catch up on some of the experiences some of these other candidates have?
Right. Well, I mean, I must say, since we moved here, I've been following the school system because staying at home with my children now, where they enter school, is my top priority at this point. So just through, you know, reading, we read the Courier Journal every day for quite some time. You know, like I say, my husband is an educator. He sees students coming in that are graduates of JCPS, and he tells me the concerns that he has at the college level of students not being prepared. And, you know, he works 70, 80 hours a week sometime, and I want to do my part for our children, for their peers, and for the graduates. You know, I want to help him. He can tell you how much I help him as far as research goes and other things, and I want him to have the top quality students that his university needs.
And you talk a lot about fiscal responsibility, and you mentioned the buses. Can you explain a little bit more about what your kind of thought process is behind that?
Well, that's where I see myself as, I guess, a mix between several candidates. I definitely think we need to reduce the amount of busing goes on and the sheer cost of our busing. You know, when I drive to pick up my daughter from preschool, it's about the same time that a lot of grade schools get out, and I'll see buses leaving the grade school that maybe have 10 students on them. And I'm not sure where they're going after that or if they're picking up more students. But clearly, even if we're busing students, we have room in our budget to take our costs down. You know, just simple estimates of how much we're spending per rider, it's much higher than the national average. You know, the fact that, as several mentioned, we're busing 70% of our students, I'd like to see that drop down to at least 60, if not fewer, in the next couple of years. Like I said, this new cluster plan, it's supposed to do that. So, you know, I'm committed to seeing where that goes. I hope that's the case. You know, giving more parents the option to attend schools closer to home. Like I said, you can't guarantee anyone in our school system anything 100% based on population, but I'd like to see, you know, if parents choose that option to stay closer to home to cut down on transportation costs. But you know, administrative spending, transportation spending, anything that doesn't directly benefit students in the classroom, I think we need to watch carefully.
Thank you. Mr. Hammond, you touched on this a little bit in the opening introduction. You have 5 children.
Yes, sir.
All but 4 attend a private school, correct?
All but one.
All but one. For those a little concerned about maybe you're not investing your own children's education in the public school system, how do you respond to that?
Well, I have a son that's in the 8th grade this year at St. Agnes, and there's a very good possibility he'll be going to Atherton next year, which is a block from our house. Like I said, Conrad will be graduating from Wagner, and I have 2 others that are in primary grade. So, you know, as the schools improve, if I'm successful, I would certainly consider moving them over to the public schools. But, you know, even if someone doesn't have any children at all in the public schools, I think the entire community is vested in the future of our children. And, you know, this is a city that I've lived in all my life. My children will grow up and live in. And the better our schools are, the better our community will be.
Thank you. We're going to take a couple questions from audience members and listeners and people that have emailed questions in as well. And this goes to Mr. Tolhurst. We've heard a lot about the parents in the Highlands and Crescent Hill, what they want. Newburgh and Goldsmith Lane are also in District 2. What would you do for students from these poorer areas, many of the families are struggling? I think the question generally is just, what would you do for some of the areas that we might not hear about?
About 20 years ago, I went to the Louisville Public Library and dug a truckload of excellent books out of their dumpster that I was getting ready to throw away, and took them out and donated them to Newburgh. I used to work out there as a community activist as well. I would take and see that they got an education. I would work with them. If the children are having trouble, I get special help for them. But we are all capable of learning. We all have the same brain. It's just our system is set up against poorer people. Sometimes I think they're set up against the colored folks as well. I mean, it's just...
Now, how does reverting back to neighborhood schools play into that, or does it?
Well, they won't be riding the buses half the day. They'll be fresher, they'll be able to think better, and they won't be worn out. Heck, I drove followed bus going down I-264 last week. Between downtown, where 71 and 64 merge, and exit 3 on the interstate at Virginia Avenue, that bus averaged between 62 and 68 miles an hour. And yes, it was full of students at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Thank you. And Ms. Burfield, we'll go back to you. Same question. For some of the schools in your district, I guess specifically, and mm-hmm. I think this is also a district-wide issue, how do you pay attention to schools that might get not left behind, but that might be doing poorer than some of the other schools that...
Right. You know. Well, do you mean individual schools, or are we talking about the actual neighborhood? I know there was a question of Newburgh and...
These talked about specific neighborhoods.
Neighborhoods. Yeah. You know, that's a point that I had hoped that we would get to. And, you know, we've talked a lot about student assignment and our busing plan. And, you know, we're coming up just a couple years. It'll be 40 years since this plan was instituted to begin with. And I wasn't alive then. I'm 29 now. But if I could go back then and if we could sit on one of those meetings... It was a very different time in our history, as I'm sure many of you know. My mother's family hails from the south side of Chicago, and my mom was at the 1968 Democratic Convention. She talks to me all the time about race relations. I'm sure that when school board officials and our superintendent at that time sat down to come up with this plan to address the needs of segregation in our community and how to fight that, I'm not sure if they thought this would go on for the next 40 years. But this isn't just a problem of JCPS. When we're talking about neighborhoods, we need the mayor, we need city leaders, we need developers, we need urban planners, and we need community members to bridge the divides between these communities. You know, we need to talk about affordable housing. We need to talk about merging, you know, the great divide between different parts of our county. It's not something just JCPS can tackle. You know, there's such a lack of affordable housing in good, safe areas for a lot of families. And, you know, I think that's not something just say JCPS can provide. I think, you know, a lot of times we've been a scapegoat for a lot of our community's problems, and maybe to the benefit of city leaders, because they're able to say, look, our schools are diverse, we have this plan, but it's not addressing the root of the problem. It's not addressing why these areas struggle with poverty. And I think we need to call upon ourselves as community members and call upon our leaders to address these issues.
And Mr. Hamming, I saw you shaking your head, nodding to some of the things that she was saying. I think some of the cooperation, not just the district, the ideas behind...
Absolutely. Ms. Burfield's an excellent candidate. The issue she brought up of it being interconnected with the communities, the schools, the parents, it's all interconnected. And that's what neighborhood schools is all about. It's getting the community involved in the success of their school. If we have to build new schools, we'll build them. If we have to hire more teachers, we'll hire them. But we've got to give these kids the focused attention they need. And in the elementary and middle schools, or we lose them in high school. It's as simple as that. You may as well drop them out in the eighth grade because they have just as little chance of graduating from high school as they do from the eighth grade. But if we can save the money, 1,000 buses a day, cut that in half, spend hundreds of thousand dollars on the least performing schools, give each kid a laptop, give each teacher 10 to 20 kids that they can focus on. And let's attack it. Let's go to war on the problem, not just, you know, let leadership trickle down and we're going to, you know, raise standards and all this, you know, all these terms people throw around. But unless you can reduce class sizes and get the kids the attention they need and get the parents involved in the community, and you can't do that with texting and Facebook, and I know that's all great, but you got to get the physical bodies in the school for the PTA meetings. I see a member of the audience right now. I won't point him out by name, but his kid goes to school with my kid at St. Agnes. And when we have a PTA meeting at St. Agnes, guess what? Every parent shows up. Okay, so we can do that with the public schools. We just got to give the schools back to the neighborhoods.
So it sounds like the idea of neighborhood schools would actually help out some of these poorer schools in District 2. To what the question was referring to.
Absolutely. Nobody on this panel knows more about Newburgh than me. I taught at Newburgh Middle School for 2 years. Okay. It all starts with smaller class sizes and focused attention. We had some, when I was at Newburgh, we had one of the best ECE teachers in Jefferson County. If I could send every child that needed the attention to an ECE teacher like that, we wouldn't have the dropout rates. But every classroom, guess what? Out of 31 kids, there were two or three, four in each classroom that the ECE classes were filled up. There was nowhere to put them. Let's get rid of buses, hire more ECE teachers, and get these kids the attention they need in elementary and middle school.
Now, is that an appropriate response to the solving the issue of some schools that are good in the district and then some schools that might be from poor areas or some people that might be from poor areas?
So it's not my response. You know, the way I would approach the failing schools and the children who go to them is, first, I would not deny them the choice of going to another school, not force them to stay in the neighborhood where their only opportunity is a lousy neighborhood school. The way I think you make a difference in parental engagement, in getting in meeting the children where they are, whatever their condition, is you have a principal who leads the school to be open to the students and the community who they actually serve. If you look at Atkinson Elementary, where Dewey Hensley, now the chief academic officer of JCPS, was the principal, that's exactly what happened. They had a partnership with University of Louisville. They brought in extra resources. He talks about making the school poverty flexible so that the hours of activities and the communication with the parents took account of the fact that their lives were different from the parents of kids who go to St. Agnes or somewhere else. And I've seen that happen. I mean, Brandeis Elementary had at least 70% of the parents come to the PTA meeting. We've got it going on in a lot of different places, and it is emphatically not all about transportation. One other thing. This neighborhood schools issue, we can talk about we're going to save money here, we're going to save money there, but we need to pay attention and be realistic, because it's nice to talk about saving $38,000 for bus, but if you're talking about building a whole bunch of new $10 million elementary schools and $30 to $40 million high schools, you got to actually do the math and understand something about finance to know how this is going to work.
Let's talk a little bit about the budget. We have a couple questions regarding the cost of education, and this question goes to Mr. Tallhurst. JCPS has a $1 billion budget, roughly. There has to be some waste in there. It's like any other organization. Could each candidate outline his or her experience in fiscal issues like this? Where would each of you start? And this has to do with the budget. Essentially, all right.
First of all, you all have to accept my apologies. I'm wearing an amplifier, and I think the battery's about dead. I lost my eardrum water skiing down on Nolan Lake about 50 years ago. I understand that, they have $1 billion budget. It used to be a heck of a lot smaller than that.
And the issue is what kind of experience do you have with fiscal responsibility with a budget this size, and where might you start if you're talking about cutting costs?
The experience I have is I come from the School of Hard Knocks. I own my own businesses. After the tornado, I cleaned up 15 sections of the city. I used to be a licensed cosmetologist. I graduated from Royal Louisville and St. Matthews. I've had management training. I've run restaurants, motels, and bars. When I retired 16 years ago, I had a tree business, a used car lot, and a salvage yard, auto salvage yard. I think everybody's making money but me. But we need to cut the waste. We need to tighten our belts, and we need to have a transparency so people can know where the money's going.
Thank you.
It's difficult for me to tell exactly how to cut the waste when I don't know where the money's going.
And
I'd like to know.
Ms. Burfield, same question.
Sure, I think we touched on this a little bit when we talked about Dr. Hargens and cutting some of the administrative positions. That's, I think, a great start. I think there are some very inflated salaries within our school system. You know, when school administrator is making a lot more than either university professors or other higher levels of education, or, you know, making twice, three, four, five, six times as much as most parents within their system, then we have some serious issues as far as spending. It's, you know, I think she's starting to make a lot of progress, but I think we need to further that. Cuts in transportation, you know, just using our resources wisely. You know, making sure that we plan ahead for how many students are on the bus, encouraging carpools, encouraging families to work together that, you know, are maybe going that direction anyway for school or other. I think when school started, there was an article about the first day of school and how many parents arrived at school to take pictures of students getting off their bus. You know, that's a prime example of not using something. If we're providing busing, it should be for those who need it, not just because it's fun. You know, experience I have dealing with this, I've been our household manager now for 4.5 years. My daughter, my oldest daughter, was born when my husband and I were still in graduate school. And I think our annual income then was probably right at about poverty level. She was actually born on the state healthcare plan that we had because our graduate student insurance didn't cover all of her births. So I think that even though I have a graduate degree and I live in a nice neighborhood, I feel that I can really connect with what a lot of our students are going through. I grew up in a very poor area of Illinois, you know, very small town that dealt with a lot of poverty. The sad thing was we had no diversity, and that's what I'm looking for my child. But a lot of the issues as far as, you know, poverty goes, my family, my dad didn't make it to community college until he was in his 40s. And I'm very proud of him for going through that. But we struggled a lot growing up. And I remember that. I remember kids' jokes about how junky and rusty our car was. So I think I can relate a lot to the challenges that many families in our school district are going to. And I think it's also important to realize that, on this panel and in our community, we have a great wealth of private schools, and many can choose that option for their children if JCPS isn't right for them or doesn't work out. But there are tens and thousands of families that don't have that option, and that's why we had to make JCPS the best it can be for families where that is their choice, and that's the only choice that they have.
And Mr. Hamming, other than obviously the buses, the question is about fiscal accountability and I guess the $1 billion budget for JCPS. Is there room other than the buses and busing to cut costs in the budget, and where would you start?
Well, Elizabeth mentioned the exorbitant salaries for some of the administrators, and I believe in Jefferson County, if you're a rank one teacher plus 15 years with about 20 years experience, you know, you're pulling down about, you know, $75,000 a year. That's not, I don't think, out of line. But some of these administrators that are making over $100,000 and principals and assistant principals that are making well over $100,000, they need to be brought in line. And if you're in the pocket of JCTA, you have no way to negotiate with those teachers or administrators. And I know there's a separate union. The administrators aren't in the teachers union. But it's still, you know, is difficult to, you know, put their feet to the fire or demand, lower salaries when a lot of them funded your campaign.
Same question. Is there room in the budget to make some cuts? And if so, where would you start?
Okay. Well, on this question, you can look it up. I'm a little surprised that none of the other candidates have looked at the audit report, which is easily available on the JCPS website. It's 500 pages long. You actually have to read it, but you can look and see where the money is spent. There are 405 administrators in the central office who are paid more than $100,000 a year. That is an obvious place to look for savings. The central office is the first place to look, not because the people who work there are bad or because of any preconceived notion about what they ought to be doing, but because every organization in America that has existed for more than 30 years has seen reorganization after reorganization of its administrative functions and its overhead. That has not yet happened at JCPS. We've got the internet. We've got all of these new technologies. We have vastly different populations and needs that we're serving. And we have an old-fashioned enterprise that needs to be reformed. So it's easy to figure out where to look. The audit lays out the information, and it does it very well. The question is, do you have the experience to know how to do that? And one thing I think I offer here is I have been on the board of billion-dollar organizations before where they've had to take hundreds of millions of dollars out of their overhead structure. Since healthcare reform passed, Humana has had to reduce its central office and its administrative costs dramatically because the law requires money to be spent on patient care. That's what we need to do here, is require the money to be spent on student care to produce student achievement.
Thank you. Last question, and we'll start with Mr. Tolhurst, and then we'll just go down the line. The protests by thousands of Chicago teachers have been making national headlines this past week. Teachers are partly upset because evaluations will be tied to the pay, and performance evaluations will be tied to the pay. What are your thoughts on how the school board, the union, and the mayor have been handling the situation in Chicago?
Poorly. I think they're playing a game up there, keeping them out on purpose, so they get all their benefits. The teacher union does not want to be evaluated. They claim they'll lose 600 teachers, will lose their jobs. They make an average of $75,000 a year. The average Chicagoan makes an average of $47,000 a year. It's a...
Follow-up.
They shouldn't be striking in the first place, and I fear we're going to have our union contracts expiring in a year or so, and I fear that we may have the same problem here.
Do you believe that teacher pay should be tied to evaluations?
Do I believe in what?
That teacher pay should be tied to evaluations of the student performance.
I think the teachers ought to be tested before they're even hired, and I think they ought to have a period of time they work before they're given tenure. In fact, I'm not even sure they should be given tenure. I think we need to eliminate the NEA from our schools, and I say that literally because I know it's a national organization, but it's in everybody's pocket, and it's out to destroy the country, I think. I call it the national enemy of America.
Thank you so much. And we'll just go down the line, Mr. Jones.
You're switching it up.
I am.
Okay, so on Chicago, my only observations are, you know, Louisville is not Chicago. The mayor of Chicago is a national political figure who made his name by throwing profanity around in the Oval Office. Our mayor is a very different person. My observation from just listening to her on the radio is that in the head of the teachers union in Chicago, Mayor Emanuel has met his match. I think their situation is also just vastly different. Chicago does not have a unified school system. It has a kind of a downtown school system where all the poor kids go and nobody else. And we have a unified school system that takes in the whole county with all of its diversity in economic, educational, racial, ethnic, all the other terms. So, on the question of how to evaluate teachers, I think that is a really important issue here. And kind of like what I just said about the central office, our teacher evaluation system, our human resources system in JCPS is really old-fashioned. The desire of the voters, of the public, for clarity about teacher competence is really important and has to be respected. But teacher performance is more than just one number one time a year. We've got to get principals who have the time and the educational competence to go in. They've got to be really educational leaders who can identify which teachers need help, which teachers need to move on, and make the make their individual school work by creating a culture in which all of the teachers are improving all the time. I don't think fundamentally, we're going to get to greatness by figuring out which 2% or 5% of teachers we need to fire.
10 seconds.
We're going to get to greatness by figuring out how to help the majority of teachers who are trying to do a good job learn how to do it better and learn how to deal with the children and all the baggage and all the issues they bring into the classroom.
Mr. Hamming.
I happened to be in Chicago all last week during the strike. I was up there for my job with the International Manufacturing Technology Show, and it was pretty jarring. We had to cross the street from our hotel, and they were on the street corner. And the ones that I talked to didn't want to be on strike. They were just out there because the union told them they had to be there. And I really like the end of David's answer when he said that, firing the worst 5 or 10% of the teachers isn't the answer. What I'd like to do is motivate the best teachers to take the most challenging assignments, whether that means bonuses or extra vacation or, a new bicycle or, whatever we can throw at them to get the best teachers to go to the least performing schools. And I don't know how you can, again, I hate to keep drawing this up, but I don't know how you can negotiate with a teachers union when they've supported your campaign. I'm sorry if I keep throwing the same stone, but please, voters out there listening to this today, don't let the JCTA buy another school board election.
Thank you, Ms. Burfield.
Okay, Well, I think there have been some great points brought up about teacher evaluations, and, you know, especially I like what you said about, you know, sending some of our better teachers into some of these low-achieving schools. I think any sort of teacher evaluation needs to be compassionate and aware of the challenges that students and their teachers are facing in that particular classroom and that school. And with regards to Chicago, as I mentioned, my mother's family all hails from the South Side. My grandma grew up in the Inglewood area, which is one of the worst in our country. Those teachers, they're amazing to go into some of those neighborhoods and some of those schools. And I agree that both Rahm and Karen must be difficult characters to get along with and try and start strike a bargain with. But it's true. You know, Chicago is not Louisville. And unless you've lived there or taught there or both, I think there's nowhere that anybody in our country can understand what some of those teachers are going through. And I think they should be compensated accordingly.
Well, that concludes our WFPL's District 2 Jefferson County School Board debates. Thank you all so much for coming out. We really appreciate it. I was talking with Steve Imhoff earlier this week, and he said it's going to be a learning curve for any candidate that gets on that board. So the questions and the responses that you hear tonight could very well change once they adapt and once they learn actually on the job. So we do appreciate you being very candid and the answers that you gave tonight. I think the community got a really good idea about who you are and how your decision-making process kind of plays out. And that's exactly, I think, what we need in Jefferson County. So again, I appreciate all the candidates coming out here tonight, all the community members. I mean, take what you heard here tonight and go out and spread the word truthfully. Take what you heard here tonight and try to give the best representation of what you heard to as many people as you can. And we hope to see you at the next debates. And thank you so much.